where he gets to go to heaven, where he reveals his nefarious plot. Fundy, 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 fundy. And the reason I brought this whole thing up was because I got an AFA action alert last week saying, is it time for us to take our fundamentalist children out of the public schools? They're dangerous. Look at this little heathen. When he probably comes from a fundy home in the first place.
That's nice. A good point, Bob.
So that's we've done it to another hour. John, you've got a show to do.
Yep. We got Maggot Brain and probably David Fermain ringing in today. We're going to talk about Funkadelic a bit.
Maggot Brain. Cool. Yum, yum. Under tooled leather.
Oh, it's some great guitar, man. It's
I don't doubt it. I don't doubt it. The titling. Titling. It's all titling. Peter, have a wonderful night.
Thanks, kids. I enjoyed it.
John, we'll see you around the corner.
All right. See you, Peter.
And in the meantime, here's the late, great Lowell George reminding you to...
Top to you know, what we use on stage, but it's very, very special because if you can see,
yeah,
the numbers all go to 11. Look, right across the board, 11, oh, 11,
and most of
11,
the
and then
amps go up to 10.
Exactly.
Does that mean it's louder? Is it any louder?
Well, it's one louder, isn't it? It's not 10. You see, most blokes are going to be playing at 10. You're on 10 here, all the way up, all the way up,
yeah,
all the way up. You're on 10 on your guitar. Where can you go from there? Where?
I don't know.
Nowhere, exactly. What we do is if we need that extra push over the cliff, you know what we do?
Put it up to 11.
11, exactly. One louder.
Why don't you just make 10 louder and make 10 be the top number and make that a little louder?
These go to 11.
Welcome to Conversation Radio's Lean, Mean, and Green Show, right here on the Horn. It's Foxed Up with John Fox, where we turn the conversation to conservation. Foxed Up is brought to you by B1 Louder Productions in Sydney, Australia, and CityNet, citynet.net. B1 Louder by ringing 877-4 Head On. That's 877-443-2366, or use your free minutes by dialing direct 304-658-5453. Yeah. Your host, the ranting, head-banging hippie, John Fox.
All right, everybody, welcome aboard. Foxed Up here for a Tuesday night, or Wednesday morning, or Wednesday afternoon, all depending on where you reside on this beautiful blue marble, such that it still is. Welcome to the Head On Radio Network, and wow, it's been kind of a chilly couple of days here in Sydney. We've had the coldest ever April days in, or not ever, but in the past something like 22 years. Man, the weather's weird around here, but, you know, we get used to it. I'll take that over the scorching heat, but I tell you, the weather just gets stranger and stranger and stranger, and you know why, and I know why. It's the rest of them that we got to get to figure out why. So, what are we doing today? Well, I'm expecting a call not too far from now from a good friend, David from Maine, because today's track of the day is one that he requested when I played Chocolate City from Parliament a couple of weeks ago, and he requested that I play this track at some point, and it's called Maggot Brain. I know you're going, nice title. But, you know, you got to remember, this is George Clinton we're talking about here. And I hadn't heard this track in quite a while, and I forgot what an amazing piece of music this is. It's pretty much an instrumental track. And there's a pretty good little Wikipedia page on the track, so I will... It gives a little insight. It says here, Maggot Brain is a song by the band Funkadelic. It appears as the lead track on their 1971 album of the same name. The original recording of the song, over 10 minutes long, features little more than a spoken introduction and a much praised extended guitar solo by Eddie Hazel. Now, we're talking one amazing bit of guitar solo here. It says, according to legend, George Clinton, under the influence of LSD, told Eddie Hazel to play the first half of the song like his mother had just died, and to play the second half as if he had just found out she was alive. Other variants of the story suggest that he was simply told to play as if he'd found his mother dead. The result of the 10-minute guitar solo, for which Hazel is most fondly remembered by many music critics and fans, though several other musicians began the track, began playing on the track, Clinton soon realized the power of Hazel's solo and faded them out so that the focus would be on Hazel's guitar. The band can only truly be heard during the end of the song, and even then it's barely audible. The entire track was recorded in one take. This is one of the things that you have to keep in mind when you listen to this. This was all done in one shot. I mean, you just this kind of stuff really doesn't happen anymore in modern music. The solo is played here for the technically curious, is played in a pentatonic minor scale in the key of E over another guitar track of four simple arpeggios. Hazel's solo was played through a fuzz box and a wah pedal, and some sections of the song utilize a delay effect. You know, the basic stock standard stuff. So we're talking 10 minutes of improvisation that is so beautifully constructed. It really, really is rather amazing. And, you know, and just keep in mind, this wasn't an overdubbed thing where the band recorded and then Hazel went in and did the guitar bit. This was all of them in a room, and it went down as you heard it, as you hear it. And I find it interesting, this little note about the thing where Clinton said, ooh, we got a spot like this, and started pulling the band back in the mix. And so this is 1971. We're not talking about huge, huge, huge amounts of tracks and technology at the time. Enough, but, you know, the rhythm guitar, the arpeggios, are almost kind of a stock standard kind of classical arpeggio format. You'll probably hear it, you know, kind of ringing back to classical pieces that you've heard. And it's an interesting track. So kick back, you know, we're talking mothership time. Hopefully David will pop up here at some point, and if he doesn't, we'll have the conversation another time, and we'll move on to some green stories. But this is a great track. And just this is the track that cemented Eddie Hazel as a guitar legend in the eyes of other guitar players. So without further ado, off the Funkadelic album Maggot Brain, 1971, here's Maggot Brain. Roll it, Bob.
Mother Earth is pregnant for the third time, for y'all have knocked her up. I have tasted the maggots in the mind of the universe. I was not offended, for I knew I had to rise above it all or drown in my own shit.
That's just amazing. I mean, how the hell did the guitar stay in tune for 10 minutes? Absolutely tearing the crap out of it like that. So I do believe our pop culture correspondent, Mr. David from Maine, is on the line. How you going, my friend? Welcome to the show.
Good evening, John. Yeah.
Oh, that, man, that is just unbelievable. I don't know if you were... If you were listening before I started playing the track about some of the legend behind that, and I don't know if you can confirm any of that.
I can say this about that. That's pretty much, I believe, spot on. The only thing that I would add to that is I was hearing Bob talking about why they would call the track Maggot Brain. Well, the story behind that is Eddie was a highly frequent user of LSD and angel dust. And the reason why they kept saying, Eddie, if you keep using that, your brain's going to turn into maggots. So, I mean, there you go. That's it. The one thing that I would say about Eddie Hazel that a lot of people don't know his name. Well, he's a hard character to pin down because of his involvement in Funkadelic in Parliament and leaving and taking an absence. And he kind of popped up here and there after 75. But he started working with, I guess he met George Clinton at the board. At the barbershop in Plainfield, New Jersey. That's pretty much where Funkadelic and Parliament kind of formed around there, that area. And George was a barber. And I guess Eddie was one of these people that was raised in the church. And he had to be kind of coalesced into joining the group because his mother was not with it. They would open the window and say, come on, Eddie, grab your guitar. We're going to go play a gig or something. And before you know it, Eddie was the lead guitarist, and Parliament wasn't taking off at Motown, or they weren't interested in him. Barry wasn't interested in him, but he was interested in their abilities. Now, I can't confirm this, but I do believe Eddie Hazel was a ghost guitarist. For those who don't know, a ghost means a session musician who is uncredited on the albums for perception reasons and contracts, and just because they don't want that name out there. And Eddie was at Motown at the same time that George Clinton was, so it does make sense that they did do session work. They did record, I believe, I'll Bet You for the Jacksons. Now, who was on the sessions is anyone's guess, because reading, trying to get the Motown session list is like trying to understand the Dead Sea Scrolls. But, you know, the thing that's amazing to me about Maggot Brain is it has a life of its own for a lot of guitarists, even though it didn't have radio play, which... Here's something for people to consider. Okay, Jimi Hendrix died, so you think that the labels would be open to playing guitar tracks by black guitarists in a instrumental rock fashion? But unfortunately, that's not the case. It probably will never be the case in our lifetime, and the reason is because partly of it has to do with intimidation. And the other part of it has to do with know your place and segregation, unfortunately.
Having been, you know, a fan of, you know, Living Color and Fishbone,
yeah,
and others, you know, I it's one of those things where, you know, why is it that all the skinny, white-haired, redneck, white guys are the ones that are all at the top of the list of the guitar god thing, and these guys don't even seem to rate when the talent is all there, even, you know, and very often I think the playing is just so much more, hate to use a common term, but, you know, soulful, heartfelt, and, you know, never made sense to me, but yeah, I think it is that know your place, boy. Don't overshadow me.
It's also ingrained in the subconscious of the guitarist. And I'll give you an example. When you talk to the Rolling Stones, or when you talk to any of these bands, they would never name Eddie Hazel, even though his track was well known among guitarists. What would they name? Well, they would name Robert Johnson. They would name Jimi Hendrix, of course, because he was out there. But they wouldn't even name Ernie Isley. And believe me, Ernie Isley, he's one of the most amazing guitarists there is. You know, so
absolutely.
So there is this. So is there was this issue of intimidation that they didn't want people to find out about Eddie at around that time. And people also have to keep in mind the fact that since there weren't that many black guitarists on the scene playing in a rock setting. I mean, you had Arthur Lee, but you know, Arthur Lee, he was a rhythm guitarist primarily, and he wasn't a technical at lead, so that wouldn't really speak to someone someone in their bedroom who at that time needed a role model because Jimi Hendrix had died. Now, when you talk about Fishbone and Living Color, you have to remember that when Jimi Hendrix died, there was a vacuum for them too. So they were like, "What?"
Oh,
now?
Absolutely.
So they were
absolutely.
Like, "What
no,
now?" Of course, they listened to, you know, of course they listened to Led Zeppelin, and of course they listened to like MC5, and they listened to all of the English and American greats. You know, Peter Frampton, everybody, just everybody, Clapton, the list goes on. But at that time, they needed someone in that space. And really, the only one who was it in that time period, I mean, you had Shuggie Otis, of course, who wrote Strawberry Letter 23, amazing guitarist, but they needed someone who was in a serious, just amplified band setting, and that was Funkadelic.
Well, and you know, mentioning, you know, Living Color, listening to Maggot Brain,
yeah.
I can definitely hear the influence of Hazel on Vernon Reid.
Oh, without a doubt. I mean, Vernon would tell you that too. To me, Eddie, if there is one unsung hero in the black history of guitar, like the ghost that keeps on living, besides Hendrix, like Bootsy said it best, I said it before on here, Hendrix was a tsunami, and Eddie Hazel was the quietest, most devastating storm you could ever imagine. You didn't even know it hit you until it was gone. And then you had to look and see what exactly changed after he left. But with Hendrix, you knew during the time. You knew what was happening. You had the lyrics. He had the guitar, he had the band communication, he had the arrangements, they had the production, they had everything going at you full force. But with Hazel, you had to dig, because his work was rather sporadic after the mid-70s. And to me, what makes Hazel interesting is the fact that not only was he a great at lead rhythm, like Hendrix, but he was also great as a vocalist. And if you listen to Free Your Mind and Your Ass Will Follow, there's a track called The Light, but it's played backwards. But if you play it forward, it's a gospel hymn called Open Your Eyes. And they only released that on 45, which later came out on the Westbound Funkadelic Music for Your Mother compilation. And Eddie did. When Eddie started playing Maggot Brain, that's when people really started taking notice at the shows. Like, oh my God, this guy's incredible. But around that time, the drugs were getting a little bit heavy. He was a little bit volatile. He was getting a little bit hard to work with. And so they needed a replacement. And then that's where they got, Kid Funkadelic, otherwise known as Michael Hampton, and they recruited
right.
him.
Right, they did a rework of that track in '78 with Michael Hampton on it.
Right, they recruited him at 16 years old because they drove to his house and said, "You got to see this kid." And he were like, "Yeah, all right, whatever." And he played Maggot Brain, and this is why Michael Hampton's still there to this day. He played Maggot Brain note for note, just blowing George Clinton's mind at 16. So he was kind of like the heir to the Maggot Brain tone. Hampton was going to be it. I mean, even Eddie knew. Everyone knew it was going to be Hampton from then on. And if you look at the album titles, you see Tales of Kid Funkadelic, which Kid Funkadelic is a reference to Mike Lampton. Yeah, so Eddie Hazel did do a little bit of work with Funkadelic. He has some vocal performances. One of them is on Super Stupid. That's one of his vocal performances. Another thing that he did was he did do a solo album with Warner Brothers called Games, Dames, and Guitar Things. And this album goes for major, major money because it's rare. Warner Brothers didn't print that much. They didn't promote it that much, probably because for reasons that Eddie was a little bit hard to deal with, maybe because of other reasons that we know all too well. He did have a love for a lot of different areas of music, and two of the covers on his album showed a definite ability to cover songs and put them in a whole different light. One of them was California Dreaming, which to me is one of the most impressive versions you'll ever hear, because Eddie has one of the most amazing voices for that track. And then the other one was the Beatles' I Want You, She's So Heavy.
Oh, well, that's a great song for guitar interpretation, and you have to be a brave individual to actually record it, in my mind. You're either going to master it and make your own thing of it, or you're going to look like a complete tosser.
Yeah. Now, if you really look into what kind of effect I'll tell you what kind of effect Eddie Hazel, this is it in a nutshell. If this doesn't explain to people the level of influence that Eddie Hazel had on black guitarists, I don't know what will. 24/7 Spies, the guitarist in there is named Jimmy Hazel. You do the math. He renamed himself.
Yeah.
So, you know, another great Hazel track is Good Thoughts, Bad Thoughts, which I recommend playing sometime. But, you know, now that you bring up Maggot Brain, you know what would be a cool thing, John? Is that every birthday, every Hazel birthday, you play this track on your show, if your show is on that day.
Okay, when's his birthday?
I believe it's coming up sometime in June or May or something.
Okay,
I don't believe it's passed yet, but have to
look that one up. And you know, I hadn't heard this track in I have to say quite a few years. And I was prepping today, and I stuck it on, and I cranked it up on the good old NS10 reference monitors, and I'm just sitting there listening to it, and I'm going, my God! And the first thing that my brain is thinking, you know, how the hell was the guitar in tune after 10 minutes of doing that to it in 71? And the other thing that I find that I think just from a guitar aspect, in that first kind of third, he utilizes the crybaby in a very non-standard way, the way that he phrases. You know, so often it's either just the back and forth, you know, whacka whacka to whatever the time of the track is, or in lead stuff, it's opening it up towards the end of a phrase, and he utilized it in a completely different fashion by actually winding it down at the end of the phrase, which was kind of giving this bit of musical restraint. And I that was not an accident. That does not happen by accident. That was by design, even though it was an improvisation. That was still by design, and that was kind of constantly holding the horse back from bolting the stable, and then finally letting it rip a little further down the track.
I agree. You can tell just from that track alone that he's a very dynamic player. You know, I guess in some ways you could say that maybe Eddie was a listener. The reason of those little one-note bends, maybe he was influenced to a degree of Santana. I would guess that he probably did listen to Santana.
Oh, I would reckon. Hey, Just real quick, I'm going to see if we can do this.
Yes.
Susan's been on hold for a while, and she's rung up because of this song. And I'm going to see if it's possible for us to actually get you both on the line at the same time, because I'd hate to keep her on the line for too long. Bob, can we bring Susan into this? Is that possible? Are we able to do that?
Hi, Susan? David. Hi, John.
Hi, how are you? So we struck a nerve with this song, did we?
Well, I just wanted to... I've heard... this guy reminds me of somebody.
Who?
Old white dude. By the name of Andrea Segovia.
Yes, classical guitarist, yes.
Right.
You know, it's funny how music reflects other artists and compares and contrasts, and I think it's probably has to do with the musical energy, and maybe also has to do probably with the passion and spirit, because they probably had the same level of passion and spirit when it came to a piece.
Yeah. The sheer raw talent that you can feel going into this. That's what I'm seeing coming out of, you know, that to me is, in a way, that calls to me like Segovia did. Segovia was strictly acoustic, but this guy is, wow. I haven't heard a guitar done like this, like I said, Segovia died.
Well, and you know, David mentioning earlier that, you know, Eddie's mom was not very into him joining this band.
Yeah.
You know, if he came from a slightly stricter household, maybe he had, you know, a lot of exposure to maybe more classical influenced music as he was growing up. So maybe he did have
very well
exposure
have.
To. But like people like Segovia and whatnot, and I think just that arpeggiated rhythm ends up lending itself to that type of impression. But it's got to be one of the most raw and unbelievable bits of guitar work I think that's probably ever been done. And the fact that it was one take, a band in a room, and done
that's mind blowing.
Yeah, I listened to it three or four times this morning, and I just sat there and kept listening to it going, you've got to be kidding me. You have got
no.
to be kidding me. But it's just amazing.
The boss is a can in one take?
you know, Eddie's swan song, this is interesting that you bring up his mother, because I think it's interesting history. Is if you look on the back of the last album that he completely did with Funkadelic was Standing on the Verge of Getting It On, and that was in 1974. But Eddie wasn't able to put his name on the actual credits, so what he did was he used his mother's name for the publishing. So if you look on the album, you'll see where it says G. Cook, and it's on all the tracks. And I don't know if John, if you're familiar with that album or if you listen to it. But it's regarded as a classic, and you can definitely hear Eddie's ability when it comes to songwriting, and was one of the perfect collaborators for Funkadelic with George Clinton. And they made that whole album is regarded as a staple, as high as Maggot Brain and One Nation Under Groove and Chocolate City and Mothership Connection, all of those albums, that's regarded as one of the, you know, that is the swan song for Eddie. And there's a, which fittingly, it's always interesting going back to this stuff, because mystically there's a track at the end that's called Good Thoughts, Bad Thoughts, and that's kind of like the fitting end for him in Funkadelic as the lead guitarist. And it's also another 10-minute guitar track, which he didn't usually do, but that one is really amazing as well. It's a bit more crystallized and not distorted, and it has more reverb to it, but it really does show Eddie's ability to do guitar work without distortion, just to show you that he can be a clean player as well.
Well, I mean, there even in this track,
yeah,
there are sections where he goes clean and then plays with that psychotic delay setting where he's randomly harmonizing with himself. And
yeah,
again, that this is done on the fly kind of thing. Now, you know,
yeah,
that he would have worked out, you know, some bits and some things a little bit ahead of time, and you know, had the delay program set up so that it was at least in, you know, in time to what he wanted to do.
Right.
But you know, I think this goes to the classical idea. It's
mm-hmm.
it's
yeah.
extremely well. It's all phrased. That's the thing. It's
yeah.
not just mindless shredding. It's phrased.
It was like point counterpoint. If I'm using the right term, he was answering himself.
Oh yeah, there's definitely question and answer stuff that's going on. I mean, probably, you know, I could probably sit there and listen to it a dozen times and probably map.
So
and,
can I?
But go and map out actually the musical concepts in each section. You know, where he's doing call and answer, where he's harmonizing on himself, where he's doing variation on a theme. You know, which are all classical music staples.
Concept.
So I think you've really
yeah.
nailed something on the head, Susan. You know, I'm so glad that you brought this track up because I wouldn't have thought of it in a million years. And you know, again, this is one of the reasons why I've always loved George Clinton. You know, here
yeah.
he sets this thing up and then he goes, oh my God, I've created a monster. The band's in the way. Let's get them
yeah.
out of the way.
yeah.
And even though it's a little rough the way that happens, suddenly
right.
you have this thing that was raw and clawing its way out of everything else has suddenly just been released. And I find it an amazing piece of artistry. And I could picture just I'm sitting there trying to picture the movie in my mind in the studio, and
yeah.
watching Clinton, you know, going and grabbing the faders, you know, pre-automation, and have you know sitting there going, you know, getting someone else over there because he didn't have enough hands, and going, okay, grab that one, okay, now slowly down.
I always thought that this was like the perfect at midnight stroke of midnight song, and there's actually a radio station in Detroit that actually played this song every night at the stroke of midnight on the radio show to dedicate that to Eddie Hazel's artistry. And
are you talking about BLF Bash Freeman?
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah, there's a little Wikipedia page on the song, and it's great. It says
yeah.
at WMMS Cleveland every Sunday morning at 1:30 a.m. from 1976 through 1994.
Wow.
Played Maggot Brain.
Yeah.
I think that, you know, I mean, that shows you someone that just went, this is great, this is going to be a weekly event. I think it's fantastic.
In the later years, when there's also, the great thing about YouTube, and I recommend people doing this, you can type in Maggot Brain, and you can see a lot of different versions of Maggot Brain done by the P-Funk All-Stars, including some with Eddie, which is like, you know, I'll put it to you the best way. Someone put in the George Clinton liner notes. Seeing Eddie Hazel on stage was like seeing Bigfoot. You didn't see him often, and when you did, it was a spectacle, and it was something to behold and say, yes, I did see Eddie Hazel on stage, because it was such a rare thing.
I ran across the YouTube of Maggot Brain with Eddie Hazel and Michael Hampton.
Yeah, there you
Maryland,
go. That one's great. Yeah, that one is amazing.
I'm kind of curious because I see listed here one of the people that's covered it, and I actually only just gave him a real listen a couple of days ago, is Buckethead.
Oh, yeah.
I didn't quite realize what kind of a guitar player that guy was. And I'd be curious to hear what he did with it.
That's interesting you say that, because Eddie Hazel was a big influence on Buckethead, and there was a track that he did on an album called Death Cube K, which is a reference to, I believe, Philip Dick novel, and also it's an anagram of his name, Buckethead. But anyways, he did a track called Maggot Dream, which almost sounds like he was summoning the spirit of Eddie Hazel, and he's able to, and that's a really nice track as well. So maybe someday you could play that. But the interesting thing about Eddie Hazel was Bill Laswell. He seemed to be like the connecting force who brought all of P-Funk back together in the 80s, and basically told them what you guys are doing is junk in the 80s. And he goes, and I can help you guys get back together, and you guys need to get this and this and that. And he was like, but first we got to go get Eddie Hazel. So he drove all the way to New Jersey. and he said, Eddie, he goes, I don't know what you're doing right now, but you got to record with me. And he took him to Greenpoint Studios. And for those people who don't know Eddie Hazel, he was the guy that brought Herbie Hancock his number one hit with Rocket, with the mannequins, and it was just like a little
underline.
Yeah. And so he brought Eddie Hazel in the studio, but unfortunately, how things worked out, they weren't able to complete the project because Eddie passed away of liver failure. So they dedicated the project to Eddie, and it became kind of like a P-Funk compilation where they would just take a lot of the guitarists, a lot of the musicians, and a lot of the vocalists, and they basically dedicated the project to Eddie Hazel. And you really get to hear his influence and where he was at the time in the 90s when he was a serious shredder too. When I talk about serious shredding, I'm talking about, you know, he was on the Vi level too. I mean, I don't know what he listened to, but he was definitely into the heavy metal scene in the 80s and 90s, and he really did pay attention to that. So he really had serious range, and there's also a great like ballad piece on there, and you know, it's a fitting end, it's a fitting closing of the book. And I always thought, you know, when I listened to going back to Maggot Brain, I always thought that probably was a song that was played during on pirate radio in Vietnam during that conflict. I always had that feeling, and because they had a lot of pirate radio stations, and I always thought with something with that much emotion, they were trying to connect with the troops and soldiers over there, and it does capture that kind of mood, and it is also around that kind of time period too.
You know, just sitting there thinking back to like 90s, and we're talking about, you know, black guitar players and black kind of in your face rock bands. Here's something that I haven't heard in probably two decades, but do you remember a band called Mother's Finest?
Mother's Finest, of course, yes. That band with Joyce Kennedy.
Yeah, because they were kind of like what 80s metal bands became long before white guys discovered it.
Right, and they scared a lot of white men at the time. A lot of people were intimidated by that band too, because of the fact that you had a female singing funk rock in a serious fashion. They didn't have that many female vocalists up front like that, and she is, oh my God, Joyce is amazing. She kills it every time.
Bob's actually saying he saw them in his sophomore year in college. Holy crap, that would have been cool.
really?
Wow. Yeah, because I remember I was 19 or something, and you know I was all in the hard rock thing, and a roommate of mine said, "Oh, if you like all that stuff, you should check out this." This came before any of that happened, and there ain't a honky in the bunch. And I'm looking at the album cover, you know, this is vinyl, and I'm looking at it, I'm going,
yeah.
"Wow!" And I put it on, and I just sat there and went, holy crap, why has no one heard, why do I not know about this? Why isn't this played on commercial radio like, you know, the Van Halen records at the time? You know,
because they didn't want you corrupting your really white little boy. That's why.
Yeah. You're probably not far from the truth.
And then also the band would have to step their games up. All of the bands, if that band was front and center, they would have to step their game up. And probably, to be truthful, most bands didn't have that range, and they had to keep going on that one vein, just keep playing that, keep playing their calling card. And that's really what it comes down to with a lot of these bands.
And at the time, in the average kind of, 80s rock band, vocals were not the highlight. Vocals were not the thing that was done very well normally, especially live. Mother's Finest was a totally different story, and I think that's probably where the lifting of game situation would have been, where that would have been most feared, saying, you can do all this produced harmony stuff in the studio, and then you end up with David Lee Roth drunk and only singing about one third of the lyrics. Try actually achieving this.
Well, it's funny you say Mother's Finest, because Stacy T, who was the guitarist in Mother's Finest, again, there's another guy. See, it's that chain reaction, the catalyst of influences. He was also a big Eddie Hazel listener. So you see, it does go to that influential moment, that type of everything just rotating on that axis. When I said when Jimi Hendrix passed, there was a serious vacuum at that time, and they were looking for somebody. Like, what now? Eddie Hazel seemed to be that one.
I was just going to ask, you said, made that comment about vocals.
Yeah.
Well, I kind of have to differ with you there, John. I've heard Grace Slick in her prime.
Oh, well, I'm talking about, to use the comparison of a slightly more modern comparison. I still remember when Living Color first popped up, and I heard that vocalist, and I heard the harmony work that those guys were doing, and I'm sitting there, and the first thing that I thought, I'm going, this is what every bloody white rock band tries to do, but can't.
Well, I do have to thank Mick Jagger. That was one of his great signings. He signed them after seeing them in a club, and got Living Color their first platinum record. Now, of course, they couldn't sustain that kind of ability to sell, and also they couldn't sustain that kind of momentum that they had right out the gate. Because once you go, to me, when you go platinum your first time, you're almost kind of just like jinxing yourself the second time. You really want to only sell, like, at that time,
something
you know,
like
what I'm talking
Orson
about.
Wells.
Yeah, you want to sell a medium range so you can go out there and tour and expand your audience. But when you do that, it's like, there's no way you can top that.
All right, y'all, hold on just a second. Bob's got something for us. He actually just found some Mother's Finest. So just hold
on.
All
right.
You got that? If you got that ready to roll, Bob, play some.
Come on, baby. Play out with it. We'll be right back.
Okay, Bob just found that. It was just called Insane Bass Solo, which and the first thing I was thinking when I heard the bass guitar roll in, I'm going, yeah, in every white rock band, the best the bass player could do was going A-A-A-A-A-A-A-E-E-E. You know, I mean, this is... there was a different... Yeah, there was a different level of musicianship going on there. But, I mean... I have no idea when that recording's from, and it's live. So I mean, that just is more proof to the pudding that they could bloody play their asses off.
Oh yeah. Now I got to go dig up a lot more stuff to download. Whee!
All right, folks. You know what? We've managed to kill an entire hour on this track, which I'm not surprised. I love having these conversations because it just proves to me that music used to be something different than it is now. And, you know, it's all become product now. It's so depressing, and to listen to guys, you know, like Eddie, like Mother's Finest, just absolutely just tear it up without the need for technology or second chances, you know, warts and all. And it absolutely overshadows most things that you hear today. So I thank you both for coming on. When Bob said that you rang in, Susan, I'm going, about this song?
John.
If
John,
you can't spend an hour talking about music, what's the point?
John, before you go,
Thanks so much. Good night.
I want to recommend to you there is a amazing version by Lily Hayden, who also played in the P-Funk All-Stars and also was one of Laswell's associates, and she also played with Roger Waters at Coachella just this weekend. And she does an amazing version of Maggot Brain on violin, on electric violin.
Yeah, I see that actually listed here on this Wikipedia page.
I'll send you it's on her MySpace page. I'll send you the MySpace page, and you can check it out.
Right on, man. Thanks so much, and thanks for suggesting this track. It's been really, really good fun to talk about this.
No problem, John. Anytime. If I ever come across any thing that I think that should be talked about musically or a track of the day, I will be sure to notify you. Oh, by the way, before I go, I have to plug this. The new Al Green album is phenomenal. Phenomenal. It's called Lay It Down. Get it May 22nd. Run out and get it. Rob someone and get the album. I mean, John, Bob, I don't know if you've heard it, John, but Bob played a track off.
I'm going to sit down and have a listen as soon as I can. I'm very curious about this because I love Al Green, and I wanted to Bob reminded me of the Mother's Finest record, which is the same one that I had. The album was called They Won't Play This on Black Radio.
Well, so, John, as always, it's been great talking to you, and I look forward to listening to more tracks of the day.
Right on, man. Thank you so much. You're a treasure and a great help to this network. Thanks a lot, mate. You take care of yourself. And that was our good friend David from Maine, our pop culture correspondent. He kicks ass. And, I mean, this is, you know, music's not supposed to be, at least for me, it's not supposed to be something that, you know, it goes in one ear, out the other, and it's over. Music should be something that can actually begin a discussion to stimulate dialogue. And, you know, this is why we once had, you know, things like music appreciation classes in school, where even for the non-musician, you would talk about what the music meant to you or what you thought the artist was trying to imply or put across. And I missed that. I think it's a terrible loss to up-and-coming generations that we don't exercise their brains in this way. You know, yes, Eddie Hazel had mad drug problems. He was probably a royal pain in the ass because he was doing something as awful as angel dust. But he left behind a legacy of incredible music, and one does not necessarily negate the other, in my mind. It's part of the human condition. And he was very human. A machine could not do what he did. It's impossible. And it's a group of people getting together and interacting that creates amazing pieces of work like that. And creates the atmosphere where something so